This podcast is an unedited excerpt from an MCLE program presented at MCLE's Conference Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Please note that MCLE's products, services, and communications are offered solely as an aid to developing and maintaining professional competence. The statements in this recording may not apply to your circumstances, and no legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice is being rendered by MCLE or its speakers. For full terms and conditions, please see the MCLE website.
What we're going to do then is go on to stories from the past. We only have about 12 minutes left, but I invite if anybody, I never know what these Zooms are, how many people are actually live versus the most recording. So I'm going to throw this out here. If anybody does want to ask a question, just try to toss it into the chat in the next 2 or 3 minutes so we have time to answer it before we go off at one. But also, I believe our contact information is in the materials you received. If not, you can find both of us at PeerSat. But if you do have follow-up questions, please do ask, because this is a lot of material and it's very nebulous. So it's difficult to kind of give you kind of a checklist or things to walk away with like we normally would. As you can see, though, the crux of it really is very clear. Just make sure that you realize walking into things, keep things as clear as possible, plan for everything in engagement letters, make the rules of engagement, to, so to speak, very clear. But also always keep this in the forefront of your mind, because with family conflicts, they can be there at that outset, that meeting, you know, use your intuition, try to sniff it out, but at the same time they can develop. And if you're a good estate planning attorney, you won't be transactional. You're gonna work with families over time. So you always, this is an ongoing everyday part of estate planning. And I would say this is equally important to understanding marital deduction planning, is understanding the role of family dynamics in estate planning and how important it is, both just in theory, but also in practice. So I think we have drilled that fully into you. And now we'll do some stories from the road. Mary, do you want to go first and then maybe do a quick story? I'll do a quick story. By then we might be out of time, but also we'll address if any Q&A comes up, that'll trump our war
sure.
story.
And I'm keeping my eye on the Q&A, so I'll interrupt if I need to. God, it's sort of like, where do you start on these stories? I think your discussion of tangible personal property is a prime place to start, because truly that is what people have knockout, drag down fights over. And I come from a very large family. And so it's sort of like, how did my parents decide what they were going to do? And it was interesting because I had another client who came from a large family, and they decided that no in-laws were going to participate in the tangible personal property distribution. And, you know, that's really fascinating to say, oh, good, yeah, right. So it's sort of like you talk about it, and in that instance, that did work out. But in other instances, there's always, you know, the sword that everybody wanted. And so how do you can't divide a sword. You can divide a pie, you can't divide a sword. So how, one of the nice things is we don't have to decide. We just have to point out that this could happen, and then talk to our clients about what do they want, what is important to them. And to also key off of what you had said, Laurel, I suggest that memos be given to trustees about what the client wants. I don't ever want it to be something that has to be in stone. I totally agree with that. And ethical wills also mean what I call it a memo of values. Because we are more than just our things. We are more than just our assets. So what kind of values do our clients want to pass down? And that can actually not happen early on. Like if you've got a young family, they're like, God, I just need to get the guardian in place or something. But it's a seed that over time, people will start saying, oh, yeah, maybe I would like these values that have been part of my family forever in writing, so that I can pass those on as well. So that's really, really important. Laurel?
Absolutely. And I mean, not to just harp on this too much, because it's not a seminar on ethical wills and side letters, although I could do that's really one of my babies. I feel like people don't realize the value in having things like that, and that when they do exist, typically they're the most valuable part of the estate, to be blunt. Probably many of you have read a book called The Tree Grows in Brooklyn, but it was about a little girl who lost her father, and he just did this one gesture before he died, and she received, I think it was a rose or a carnation at graduation. And I always think about that because we're so fortunate to be in the practice area we're in that we get to work with real people and real families. And we get to, I don't know, basically use the law and legal things and dry things to create really a platform or a forum for the family to have the flexibility to maneuver, to not worry about this stuff. And really, I go into estate planning first and foremost with the mantra, I think it's doctors who use it, do no harm, or, you know, try to minimize the damage we might otherwise do if we're thinking really just with our tax hats on, the tax tail wagging the dog, or just our avoiding probate hats on and our planner's hats on. And I think that when we talk about family conflict, although we talk about it in terms of how do you kind of surmount that, how do you get over this hurdle, how do you bust through this, really family conflict is so inherent in estate planning, and it's an opportunity, I think, that we have, that it's, you have to not just acknowledge it and overcome it, but you kind of have to work within it. And I think that the people who are estate planners who I find and I look up to and I think are extraordinary are the ones who realize that that's the uniqueness in our practice area. We're not in mergers and acquisitions. We're not buying and selling organizations. We're not as good as we are at the legal aspects, and we better be good at them. The real value comes in preserving the family. And if we do it right, we're able to enhance the family and enhance what they're able to do. And that's where the high comes in estate planning. So those are just my thoughts on it. Now, in terms of the story, we're going back to tangibles. Two quick stories. The first is a client family that I've worked with for over 10 years, and they unfortunately lost a son. One in a generation that we never expected to lose him. He was my age, actually. And he had unbeknownst to us, he'd been quietly accumulating a lot of wealth and had a multi-million-dollar estate that he passed on to his siblings, found money. And the thing is, the crux of the estate and the thing that almost broke up the three remaining siblings and something we really had to spend a lot of time on was this individual, Ollie, had a canoe that he absolutely loved that doesn't even float anymore. It's not a seaworthy canoe. And it was everything to him. And he was a single guy and he just loved his canoe. And that really, that canoe, the fact that he died without a will and who got the canoe. And that really symbolized a lot more. And in that particular family, God bless them, nobody cared about who got the money. Really, it was who got the canoe. Along those lines, I had another family that I worked with in Concord, and we knew right at the outset there were four siblings, and it wasn't to say they didn't get along. It's I don't know, to put it not even too mildly, there has to be a word for it. So we knew what we were going into with the tangible personal property. So in the drafting, this was when I was an associate, but the attorney in charge made a point of drafting a very lengthy memorandum on how the tangible personal property was going to happen. And we actually had the siblings come in and understand it and talk about it and voice it. Because again, anything you do in the planning, if you think, gosh, I don't really want to show this to the other siblings, is there going to have a problem? There's going to be a whole headache. I would advise you do it then. It's easier to have the headache when the parents are alive and you can change things. The headache will never go away. The headache will become bigger. And then when everything's carved in stone, irrevocable, it's harder. So we did that. And then when the time came, we actually hired the Concord police to come to the house because we knew there was going to be violence. There were going to be fist fights. And there were. It was an interesting evening up on the ridge in Concord Center. But the point is that as a planner, you can see these things oftentimes coming down the road. And just like we try to plan against every iteration of everything, I don't know, in our Q-tip trust when we talk about, or I don't know, maybe if you're not doing trust, a tax apportionment clause. Our whole point is every scenario that could come in, we need to have it in writing. How do we address that? Look at family conflicts and family emotions and dynamics and tangible personal property memorandums and who gets what and who's appointed to what in the same fashion. We're trying to protect against the what ifs that happen at the end of the day. And so if you on the planning side start to realize that those what ifs are going to be really difficult and there is a lot of conflict, you need to integrate that at the drafting stage, at the planning stage. If that's part of the identity or the personality of the family, it needs to be taken account for just as much as whether or not they have a large IRA as opposed to a bank account, or whether or not they have mostly real estate as opposed to life insurance. One of the factors in estate planning is the dynamics in the family. And I think that's why I want to close by saying it should be given equal weight. The type of plan I do for someone who has all of their wealth in a retirement account versus all of their wealth in cash, it might be very different. Same with the plan that I do for a family that has major conflict and major difficulty. That's going to be a plan that's crafted and designed probably around addressing that. That might be the primary focus in that plan, as opposed to some of the things, the checklist. So that's really my takeaway, is to give all of this stuff equal weight and understand that unlike some other fields, this isn't the fluffy, nice stuff that you add on at the end. This is really crux, core to estate planning, is understanding the family dynamics, the relationships, and all of those things that need to be critically understood, appreciated, acknowledged, and planned for. Mary, any other thoughts, or do we have any questions or anything?
No questions, but one other thought is that don't forget your tax clauses, because who's getting what and who's paying for the taxes, the expenses, the funeral, et cetera, it can be awful, because it can be that like real estate goes to one family member and all the rest of it goes to the other family members. And then all of the rest of it diminishes over time and the real estate grows over time. And if the tax is not apportioned equally, then that can cause conflicts. So you're using your tax head, you're using your counseling head, you're using all of your skills to do the best you can for the client, keeping in mind conflicts happen. And as Laurel said, we are not to do ill. We are to try to help things be better. Thank you, Laurel, for inviting me to be part of this.
Oh, thank you. And thank you all. I hope you found this beneficial. And again, I think there's some availability to do feedback at the end. I know this is a fairly new session, so we're kind of creating it as we go. I hope you found it helpful. And definitely give us feedback, because I think we're going to try to do this year to year. So we definitely want to make sure that it was beneficial. Thank you guys so, so much. And also really do standing offer for those of you who watch and those of you who followed up, you do know, I'm always welcome follow-up questions. This stuff is really tough. And when you see it in real life, it never plays out exactly the way it does on a bar exam question. But when you see it, you know it. If it talks like a duck and walks like a duck and comes out, it's probably a duck. and just always remember to give it equal weight, that it is as important as you think it is.